Today's daf is Bamatsia Daf Kuf Hey. We are holding on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. We're at Amri Nahardai on the fourth wide line of Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. We're going to begin the daf with a discussion about an iska, palga milva, palga pikadon. Someone, Ruvain, invests with Shimon and gives him items to go and do business with, and the deal is that half of the items are considered to be a halva'a to Shimon, and the other half are considered to be a pikadon that Shimon is responsible for, and there's some percentage of the profits and the losses that Ruvain is accepting on the items. And the Gemara is going to have several statements of Rava about rules of an iska arrangement. Then we're going to have the Mishnah, and Amud Aleph is going to talk about why a choker, a farmer, can't refuse to weed a field, even if he says, look, I only committed to pay you X amount of grain per year. I'll still give you that, and I'll give you from the very best grain. So what does it bother you if I choose not to weed the field? Then the next Mishnah is going to talk about an aris has to, whether an aris has to continue to work a land when it clearly underproduces. It doesn't, he sees right away, it's not growing what it's supposed to grow, so it's simply not worth his time to do all the harvesting and the piling and the processing of the grain. So at what point do we say that it's so bad that he doesn't even have to continue working on it? The Gemara is going to have a machlokas, how unripe olives and grapes need to be in order to not be mekabel tuma, and in the Amud Beis we're going to have a lot of teachings of the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yanai on a variety really of different topics, but they all relate to different shiurim of how much, how big something is, how many of something, because it relates to our sugya about how much produce has to be in the field for us to say that it's worthwhile to continue to process that produce. Then the Gemara is going to define the shear of a kri and have a similar discussion in figuring out the amount of leket in the field. If leket gets lost in the field because it gets covered by other grain, how do we do the cheshbon to figure out how much leket was there to begin with? So let's begin on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. Fourth wide line of Kuftal and Beis. Ami Nardoi. Hai iska palga milva u palga pikadon. When one has an iska arrangement, the assumption is that it's half milva, half pikadon. That half of what you've given the person who's going to do the work in investing the items that you gave him is considered to be a loan. The other half is considered to still be yours. It's a pikadon. Avra Rabbanan Milsa Denichale Lelove Venichale Lemalve. And this, in this way, the Rabbanan did something that's beneficial to each party. Hashtad Amrina Palga Milve, now that we say that it's Palga Milve, Iba'i Lemishti Beishichra, let's say the managing partner, meaning the one who's going to be involved in the investment, the one who's actually going to be doing the work, he decides, you know what, I want to take my half, the half that was loaned to me as a milva, and I'd rather buy beer with it and do my own thing, satisfy my own taivos with it, rather than invest it, rather than actually work with it. So Shaper Dami, he's allowed to do that, because when milva's lo tzanitna, someone lends you money, you can do whatever you want with that money, as long as you're going to pay back the money, so it should be no problem. Rava Amar Lach, he called it Iska. Now the reason we call it an iska is because when he gives it to him, the deal is you have to do business with it, you have to work with it, you have to manage it, and you can't just go and buy beer with it just because that's your interest right now. Meaning you are limited. It's not purely a milva where you could do whatever you want with it. The Rashi writes that the Balamos has a taina on the managing partner that you have to protect this money and to do business with it, because it's mistaver that since you have an investment in this deal, you're going to work a lot harder on the deal. Meaning that's why I trusted you with my investment, because you're in with me on the same investment. But if you're not going to be in with me on the same investment, you're just going to take it to do something else, and you're only investing my money, so how can I trust that you're going to put the same type of effort into that investment? That's how Rashi understands. Tosfos explains that the Malva wants that the Keren should still be there in order that you have what to fall back on, meaning the size of the investment matters a lot in terms of the success of the investment. So if the size of the investment is only going to be half of what I thought it would be, so that that guarantees much less success in the investment. In the Sefer Beis Aharon, he writes that sometimes it will happen that there will be a lot of schara that you're able to make a lot of money off of, but you can only buy it if you have a lot with you. If you don't have a lot to deal with, so no one's going to want to do business with you on major opportunities. So you lose out on opportunities when you're dealing with half of the money that originally you should have had. Says Gemara further, Amar Rav Yidbar Avin, v'imeis nasa metaltalin etzel banav, that if the managing partner dies, so the items are considered metaltalin, that which is palgamilv is considered metaltalin by the children, and therefore the other partner is not allowed to collect metaltalin from Yisomim. That's a rule that you're not allowed to collect metaltalin from Yisomim, so he's not going to be able to get his milv. It's like any other balchov, he's not going to be able to get it back. Rava Amar Lahachikar Leiske. The iska, the emes, l'yas metaltalin etzel banav. Now that's why we call it an iska, meaning the benefit of calling it an iska and not just a regular halva'a is that if he dies, you will be able to get the metaltalin from the banim. Maram Rutenberg writes in the tshuva, it's quoted in the tshuvas memonios in Mishpatim Simin Yud Beis, that macht salva'a, the iska, is an absolute halva'a. It's 100% considered a loan. The impression you get from the Gemara that Rava keeps saying, not really a loan, you know, it's an iska. It's an iska, and therefore it's not considered metaltalin by the Yisomim. So the Maram Rutenberg says no, it's absolutely a loan to the point that shviyas mishametas, shmita would cancel the loan. The fact that the balamos can collect from the children that it's not considered metaltalin meitzel banav has nothing to do with its with it not being a loan, with it not being a halva'a. Rather, the reason is, he says, like Rashi says, that an iska is considered like karka and not like metaltalin, because it's not nitan lahutza'a. Metaltalim is nitan lahutza'a. So the malva is somich on it, like he would be somich on karka. Meaning the reason that the malva is not somich on metaltalim is because it's here today, gone tomorrow. But if the person who's borrowing doesn't have the right to be motzi to whatever he wants, to buy beer with it or whatever else he may want to do, so then the guy is somich on it. The malva will be somich on it, and therefore it would have a din of karka rather than a din of metaltalim. However, the Marachor Zeru and Simulam Tess writes that Shemitah is not Mishamit in Iska, because the Keren of the Iska always remains in the Rishus of the Nosein, because the Misase could do with it only business. He's not allowed, it's not Nitan Lotza, and therefore it's not really alone. So when the tkufa, when the time period of the iska is over, the lova becomes a shomer sachar on the entire keren, and he's pata from onsim. It's not a regular halva'a. So that's a machlokas rishonim. Amar Rava, chad iska v'trei shtari pseid de malva. That if there's only one iska, but there are two shtaros on the one iska, ultimately the malva loses out. Ultimately the investor is going to be the one that loses out. How so? So normally when you're involved in an iska arrangement, the stam iska, the bailim, the investing partner, gets one third of the profits, but he has to take upon himself half of the losses. That's the price you pay for not doing any of the work. Right, so he only gets one third of the profits, but he has to take upon himself half of the losses. So let's say a person gave two bundles of begadim that are worth $100 to do business with, and the mekabel with one of them was made 15 dinar. He profited 15 dinar. With the other one, he lost 5 dinar. So if it was all in one shtar, we would just look at the net gain. So the net gain would be that it's a gain of 10, because he lost 5 and he gained 15, so it would be a gain of 10. So when it comes to profit, what do we say? The investing partner gets one third. So he gets one third of the 10. He gets 3 1/3. But if you view them as two separate arrangements, so he gets half of the losses, one third of the profits, so it, on the side that lost 5, so the investing partner loses 2.5. On the side that gains 15, he only gains of the profits. He only gains one third. So he gains 5 out of the 15. So with a gain of 5 and a loss of 2.5, he only ends up with 2.5, which is less than 3 1/3. So that's why if you have chad iska but two shtaros, the malva is going to be the one that loses out. He's going to get less than he otherwise would have gotten. On the flip side, trei iski, if there are actually two separate iskas, the chad shtara, and there's only one shtar for the two iskas, seder de love. That's going to be a loss to the love. Take the same case that there's two separate iskas. One of them he gains 10, the one of them he makes 15, the other one he loses 5. So if you view it as one deal, so it's a net gain of 10, and the managing partner on any profits gets 2/3 of the profit, so he would get 6 2/3. He gets 2/3 of the profit. But if you look at it as two separate deals, so in the losses, the managing partner loses half, so he lost 2.5 out of the 5. In the gain, where they had 15, he gains 2/3, so he gained 10. So that's a total gain of 7.5, which is more than the gain of 6 2/3. So that by making it one shtar and viewing it as one big deal rather than as separate deals, that's going to ultimately be a loss to the loveh. Rava also tells us, Hayman de kabel iska min chavrei, a person is mekabel an iska from someone else, upasid, and it loses. Taruch umalya v'lo odei. So what does he do when he sees that it loses money? The deal's not over yet, so he continues to use some of this. He fills in the losses so that he can reinvest and hopefully make back some of his losses, make back some of the money. And he never told the investor. He never let the investor know that he was down at any point in time. Lo matziyamarle. So he can't say to him at the end, Dari mehech psei debadai. Listen, we originally lost $50, and our deal is, you take half of the losses. So of the 50 that we lost, you take $25 of loss. I then gained back those $50 through wise investments. You get 1/3 of whatever I gained back. So you didn't earn back your full 25. You only earned back 1/3 of the 50, and I get the rest. So you cannot say that. Misham da'amar lei, because you can say to him, lahachi terachta l'mal yusei, ki'echid d'la likru lach mafsidiski. The reason that you reinvested and were so careful to make sure to spend the time to reinvest was that you shouldn't get a bad reputation as someone who loses money on investments. Meaning, if this is what you do for a living, you don't want people to think that you're losing money. So therefore, the deal is not over until you come to me. Now, some of the Rishonim write that if he did let him know, meaning the whole case in the Gemara was where he didn't let him know. So the Ran and Mukayosef, others say that if he did let him know at the time that there was a hafsid, then that's enough for it to be considered that they have to share that hafsid 50-50, and that whatever they gain after that, meaning it's a valetina, whatever they gain after that, the investing partner would only get 1/3. However, the Meiri disagrees. He says, even if you let him know, you don't consider the hefsid separate from everything else. Balmar says the whole discussion is where he's mashlim the hefsid from a different asek, not from the profits of this asek. So that's why if you let the balamos know, so that's why the balamos would take 50% of the losses if you let him know, because it wasn't from the same investment. V'yama Rava, another teaching Rava has about iska. Hani betray da'av di iska ba'adi adadi v'ravach. Two people are engaged in iska together, meaning there are two managing partners and there's one investor. So, and it makes some money. V'amalei chad l'chavrei ta liflog. One of the managing partners says to the other managing partner, let's divide right now. I don't want to continue with the investment. Let's divide it at this point. If the other one says, no, let's go make some more money, let's reinvest and make more money off of this, the term of the agreement is not over yet, so we have an opportunity to make more money, so he could be ma'akev and he can force him to continue to invest. Havli palgo deravcha. If he says, give me half of the revach, meaning that I deserve, meaning we'll divide right now between us and the whatever profits we've had up until this point, but the keren we'll still use to reinvest. So we'll reinvest the keren, but I just want to know that I've pulled away some profits from this. Amalei ravcha lekarna mishtabed. He can say no. The revach is mishtabed. Shuba to the Keren, that the Revach has to be used also in continued investments. The Amrle, Havli Palgi the Ravcha Palga Karna, and if he says, you know what, give me half of the Revachim and also half of the Keren, I don't want to be involved in this money anymore. Samrle, the second guy could say, Iskala Hadadi Meshuba, you may not want to be involved in the money anymore, but your half of the Iska is Meshuba to my half of the Iska. And if my half of the Iska is still going to be working, then your half of the Iska has to still be invested. The Amalei Niflog Ravcha V'Niflog Karna V'Matilach Pseida Darina Badach. And he says, you know what, let's split it right now. And if you find that you need more capital, that you need more money, so I'm guaranteeing you that I'll be back in. But right now, I want out. Samalei Lo Mazel DeBeitrei Adif. He says, even though you're giving me a guarantee, the mazel of an investment that two people make is a better mazel, so I'd rather make the investment with two people with all of our money together. So the truth is, the Tosfos points out, we could have said this at the beginning, right? Tosfos points out that really we could have said this on all of the suggested ways out of the partnership that we had until this point. You could just say, no, you can't get out of the partnership because the mazel of Beitrei. But we had more business-like tainas previously, so they were better, stronger tainas from a business sense. So that's why we only rely on mazel of Beitrei when there are no other tainas left. The Rif writes that in the name of the Bahag that the halacha is not like Rava, because Imkain in the davar sof, one of them could always be makiv the other one to continue to be osek in the money. That's what he quotes from the Bahag. But the Rif himself says that you can't just reject Rava without a raya when Rava is quoted in the Gemara without any cholik. There's no one that says differently than Rava. And he says even Rava only said it when we know that the minhag makom was that if they're that if they would continue in the business, that they would that standard is that they would make more money. But if you know that they've already tapped out the investment and that there's nothing else that they're going to be able to make, and certainly where there's a significant chashash that they'll lose out, so then Rava would agree that you could dissolve the partnership and that you could divide it. The whole case of the Gemara is where standard business practice would be to still reinvest, that they haven't made all the money that they could have made from this investment. Of course, if people were able to predict this with great accuracy, you know, business would be a lot easier. So I'm not sure exactly what he's talking about, what standard practice, not standard practice. Some people are more risk averse and some people are, so I don't know. I'm not sure what that means. Okay, says the Mishnah, HaMakabel Sadda Mechaver V'lo Ratzal Anachish. If a person is a choker, he's Makabel a field to work on and he's going to pay X amount of grain per year, and he doesn't want to weed the field. That's it's a malacha that he's not interested in doing. So he says to the Baal HaSada, why should this matter to you whatsoever? I'm going to give you whatever, however many bundles of wheat I said I was going to give you, I'm still going to give you. Ein Shomano, we don't listen to him, he still has to do this. Now what are we talking about over here? Are we talking about a makom where the minig is to be menachesh, or are we talking about a makom where the minig is not to be menachesh? Magen Mishnah, the 8th paragraph of Hilchos Chirus writes that if it's a place where the minig is not to be menachesh, then we absolutely have no right to tell him to be menachesh. Hakol k'minig medina. Well, over here we're talking about, so you expect him to say over here we're talking about a place where the minig is to be menachesh. No, that would be obvious also. Over here we're talking about a place where there is no minig yadua. And therefore, the minug is not enough of a reason to be mechayev him. You need a taina to be mechayev him. You need some reason why you want him to weed the field. So that's what the Mishnah says. Ein shomen lo. You know why we don't listen to him? Mipnei sheyachal omer lo lemachrat yotzim mena umal lefanei asavim. That tomorrow you're going to leave this field and you're going to abandon this post and I'm going to be left with a field that's grown over with weeds. So no, thank you. But only because he has that taina is he able to force him to be menachesh. Because it's not, and it's there is no known minag. If there was a known minag, says the Magen Mishnah, then of course he'd be able to force him to be menachesh. However, when the Shulchan Aruch quotes this in Choshen Mishpat, Simin Shin Chaf, he says that it's talking about a case where Makom Shenagol Lenachesh, and the Chocher just doesn't want to do it. So the Shulchan Aruch clearly understands, not like the Magen Mishnah, that the whole Mishnah is talking about where the minag is that way, and the Chocher might have still had a taina. Why would you insist on that minag? It doesn't cost you anything. So the Baal HaSadda says, no, I have a right to insist insist on the minhag because it might cost me something if you abandon this field. Let's say the chocher says, you know what, afterwards, after I harvest everything, I'm going to plow over the field, so whatever weeds are there are going to be destroyed anyway, so it shouldn't bother you that I'm not weeding it. The guy can say, the owner of the field can say, you know what, I want the best wheat, so if there are still weeds in there, then I'm not getting the best wheat. He says, you will get the best wheat because I'm going to go to the market and I'm going to buy you the best wheat. I'm not going to give you wheat from this field. So he could say, I want wheat from my field. I don't want wheat from someone else's field. And if he says, you know what, I will weed the part of the field from which I'm going to take the wheat that I'm going to give to you. So you will get wheat from your field. Your wheat will be perfect. It's just the rest of the field that I want to leave without weeding. So the owner of the field could say no, because then my field doesn't get a bad reputation, because everyone's going to know that my field is that ugly one that hasn't been weeded properly. But wait, that's not what the Mishnah said. The Mishnah said that the guy's taina was that you're going to leave it, you're going to abandon it, and it's going to grow weeds. So not any of these tainas that we're saying. That the seed of the weed that falls has already fallen in the field and will continue to produce more weeds. It will grow bad type of produce. So that's ultimately the real taina. That it is that it's not something you can make up for later, because it's already growing. The whatever seeds fall from these weeds are already growing in the field and is gonna cause the field to be of inferior quality. Chaznish raises the question. He says, "Chiti da'aroi ba'ina." The guy says, I don't want you to go to the market and buy me the best available produce. I want produce from my field. So the Chaznish says, "Mehechi tesi," that he can insist on that. At the time that he's kona the sada b'chakirus, that chitim doesn't exist yet. You can't be mechayiv himself on davar shelo b'liolam. So the Chaznish suggests that we view it as if they made a tanai that he gives them dafka from the chitim that are going to grow there, and otherwise the chakirus is batel. And if batel chakirus, so all the peros belong to the Baal Asada, he would just have to pay the choker like an aris for his work in the field. So that's how the Chaznish understands. Furthermore, he says another possibility, even though you can't be makna davar shelo b'al yolam, but you could be mischayiv in the davar shelo b'al yolam. You can make yourself chayiv for the future in davar shelo b'al yolam, so the kinyan isn't chal yet, but you're mischayiv yourself in the future for a davar shelo b'al yolam. Okay, new Mishnah. Hamakabel sadeh mechaver v'lo'asa. Let's say you're makabel a field to work on, and it doesn't produce. It underproduces. So you were expecting to have a major crop, and then you were going to work, and you were going to get a share of it, or whatever. But it turns out that it produced very little. So it doesn't seem worth it to do all the harvesting and the piling and the processing in a field that's produced almost nothing. So how much is almost nothing? How much do we say do we consider it to have produced enough that you actually do have to do the work? So in Yeshba Gedela Amid Kri, if it's enough to make a heaping pile of grain, then you do have to do the work. What do you mean a pile of grain? How big is the field that you're dealing with? If it's enough that you can that you could sow it again with that which you harvested, that you'd be able to plant the field again, that's how we measure it. It's not based on a kri, because a kri doesn't mean anything. A giant field will obviously, no matter how poor the crop is, you'll be able to make a pile. So that can't be it. Tan Rabbanan, Hamakabel Sadeh Mechaver V'lo'asa. If someone was makabel a field and it didn't produce, Im Yesh Bakadei Lahamid Kri, Chayiv L'Tapava, like the Tanakama said in our Mishnah, then he has to work on it if it's big enough to make a Kri. Shekach Kosevlo, because that's the deal that he writes in the agreement, in the Arisus agreement, Ana Okim v'Anir v'Ezra v'Echzod v'Amer v'Edosh v'Idri. I'm going to stand and plow and sow and reap and bind and thresh and winnow v'Okim Karya Kadamach, and I will then raise up a heaping pile for you. So that's the last line in the contract of the process that he has to go through. So therefore, if he can't get to that last line because they're never going to have enough produce to make a heaping pile, then he doesn't have to do the rest of it either. V'tesi ant v'titel palga, and then you will come and you will get half of the produce. V'ana ba'amali b'nafkus yadi palga, and I, as a result of my work, I'm going, and my expenses, I'm going to get the other half. So how do we measure what's considered a pile that he's going to be able to get, that it's worth working on, and he has to work on it? If the winnowing shovel can be stuck into that pile and it would stand straight up, because the pile can hold it firm, that's a significant pile. But if it's like a little tiny pile, you stick the winnowing shovel in, it'll just topple right over, then that's not a real pile. What if you could see both sides of the winnowing shovel? Meaning the pile, you make the pile very narrow and tall so that it could hold the winnowing shovel in place, but you could see both sides of the shovel and both sides of the pile. It's not totally inside. So Tashma Amra Biavola Didi Mefarshin Mened Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina Kol She'ein Kone Shalo Roa Pnei Chama. If the scooping part of the winnowing shovel cannot see the sun, meaning it's completely covered in, then it's considered to be a big enough pile. But if it's peeking out on either side, on either of the sides of the pile, where it's not completely covered from the sunlight, that is not considered a large enough pile to make working on that field worth the effort. Itmar, Levi Amar Shalosh Se'in, that the shear is that it has to produce is three Se'in. Tver Rabbi Yana Yamri, Sasayim, two Sa'a. When we say sasayim, it means sasayim excluding the expenses that you have to invest in it. Meaning if the artist has to invest in his work in the field, so if it's he would bet if the profits would be a sa'a after you pay for the investment, then he has to continue to work in that field. Tananasam. That if you have pritze zesim and anavim, which we'll see in a moment what they are, Beishamai says it's considered a food and it could become tamei with tumas ochlin. Beisilal says no, it's not a food at all, and therefore it's not tamei with tumas ochlin because it's not ra'i la'achila. My pritze zesim, what does the term mean? What are pritze zesim? Some rafuna rishay zesim. They're these evil olives. What makes them evil? That they won't ripen. They won't. They'll never be delicious. Amar of Yosef Mikra. What's the pasuk that tells us that pritze means rishayim? Ubnei pritze amcha v'inasu lahamid chazon v'nichshalu. Rav Nachman Yisachar Me'acha. He has a different pasuk. V'holid ben paritz shofik dam va'ases me'acha me'ela. The pasuk continues. So those psukim are rayas that pritze means Russia. That a Russia is a shofik dam, and yet what is it called? The shofik dam, a parit. So you see that a parit and a rasha are one and the same. The Ein Elio writes that Rav Yosef is quoting a pasuk that teaches even further that even if everyone acts this way like Rishayim, it's still considered to be a rasha, still considered to be a parit. So even if all the peros are bad, still it's considered to be pritzim. You don't say, oh no, this is just the new standard. If they don't ripen and they don't produce, then they're considered to be pritze zesim v'anavim. So what did we say about pritze zesim v'anavim? That according to Beis Shammai, they're still considered food. According to Beis Hillel, they're not considered food, and they're not mekabel tuma. Rav Lazar Amar, so how do we define what's considered a fruit that doesn't ripen? So Rav Lazar Amar, Arba'as kavin l'kora, that zesim that you can only get 4 kav of oil for each beam that you press down in the Beis Chabad, so normally it's supposed to produce more than that. So that would be pritzim. Debei Rabbi Yani Amri, sasayim l'kora, that it's 2 sa'a for each pressing, for each olive pressing. V'lo pligi, haba asu demayli kura ba'ulula, and they're not even arguing. Rabbi Lazar was talking about a place where the shear is 4 kavim, in a place where they bring the olives to under the where the olive press in at a core at a time, which is 30 sin at a time. So then if 4 kav comes out, that's called unripened olives. But more than 4 kavs come out, then it's not called unripened olives. But But the Chachmi Beis HaMedrash of Rabbi Yanai, who said that the shear is Sasayim Shemen, they were talking about Ba'asu de Ma'elit Tlasa Korn Ba'ula, a place where they bring into the Beis Habad 30 kor of olives, and therefore if two sa'ah of oil comes out, which is three times the amount of four kavim, it's still considered to be unripened olives. So it's all a matter of, you know, the output can only be measured as a function of the input, obviously. If you're putting more olives in, then you can expect more oil out. Tanu Rabbanan. We have another braisa that also talks about how the Chacham in the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yanai had what to comment on. Alu bi'ilan shekochara. Let's say two people climb on a tree that is a very weak tree. Ubisocha shekochara, or on a branch that's a very weak branch. Tameh. So if you have two people, a Zav and a Tahar, that are climbing on the same weak tree or weak branch, the Tahar person becomes Tameh, because since the branch has some give, it's moving as a result of the Tameh person, and a Zav is a Tameh person when he leans on him, when he puts his weight on him, and this is considered like he's leaning on him, because he's moving the branch that they're both on. Hechi dami ilan shekochara. How do we define what's called a weak tree? Amrit v'ramayane kol she'in v'ikaro lachuk rova. If the trunk of the tree is not wide enough to carve out a rova of a kav, a hollow space of a rova of a kav, then it's considered a weak tree. But if the trunk is wide enough to hollow out such a space, then it's not considered a weak tree. Hechi dami socha shekochara. How do we define what's called a weak branch? Amresh lakish. Anytime if a person would hold on to that branch, he would be able to reach his hand completely around the branch to the point where you would no longer see that portion of the branch that he's holding on to. That's considered to be a weak branch. Tananasam. Hamahalich, another halacha that the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Yanai had what to say about. Hamahalich Beis HaPras. Someone who's walking in a Beis HaPras. A Beis HaPras is a sada. It has a couple of definitions, but for our purposes, a sada shenechara. A field where a kever was plowed in that field, so there are bone fragments all over that field. And the halacha is that an etzem kisaora is metame b'maga or behesed. If you move an etzem kisaora, it's just not metame, it's a ba'ohel. So you're going through that field al gabe avanim shiucha lahasid, on top of stones that are able to move the bones that are underneath it. But you're not touching any of the bones, you're just going on top of stones. Or ala adam vel behema shekochan ra. Or you're riding on the back of a human or an animal that is very weak. Halacha is tameh. The person riding on the back becomes tameh, because it's considered as if he himself is moving the bones. Hei chidami adam shekochara. How do we define a person who's weak? Amarish Lakish, Kol Sharoch of Arkavos of Nokshos. If when you're riding on his back, his knees are buckling, his knees are knocking together against each other, that makes him weak. So it's Lav Dafka, a measure of his strength. It's also probably a function of your weight on his back. But the point is that that's considered that you're moving whatever he's moving, and he's not considered independent, because he's clearly very much affected by your weight. How do we define what's called a behema that's kochara? If because of the weight, the animal starts being matil galalim, the animal starts going to the bathroom because of the weight, so that means that it's ceasing to function normally as a result of your weight. Amrit Beraviane, litfila u litfilin dalit kavin. Another statement in halacha. When it comes to tfila and when it comes to tfilin, the measure is four kav. So what is that about? What about tefillah? What about tefillin? L'tefillah mayhi, t'tanya, nosi maso el ksefa, v'igiyaz man tefillah. If a person is holding a package on his shoulders, and it comes time to daven, pachos midalit kavin, if the package is less than four kav, mafshilin la'achorav u'mespalel, then he can put it in a backpack behind him, which makes it much easier to carry, and he could daven even though he has the weight of it on his back, because it's not so big. It's less than four kav. This is in contrast to when something's in your hand. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Brachos and Maseches Sukkah that when you're holding something in your hand, you're not supposed to daven so long as you're afraid you might drop it, so long as it's the kind of thing that you'd be afraid to drop. Money or something that could break easily, you're not allowed to hold in your hand, regardless of four kav and not four kav. But that's when it's in your hand. That requires a little more focus. But when something is slung over your shoulder, so that's something that doesn't require as much focus, and therefore, as long as it's four kav, less than four kav, you could daven. Arba'a kavin, maniach al gabi karka, umispalel. If it's four kav, though, then you put it on the ground, and you could daven. There is some discussion what the reason is that you're not allowed to hold something in your hand and daven while you're holding something in your hand. The pashtus of the sugya, clearly a Maseches Sukkah, and the rov rishonim is that the concern is that you're not going to be able to concentrate. That it will be a chisaron in kavana because you're going to be too worried about the item in your hand. I saw Tzvika Reisman sent me an essay that he wrote where he wanted to be medayik in the Rambam, that the Rambam's shita is that it's not a proper way to be omed lefnei hamelech. That what kind of chutzpah that you're holding something as you're omed lefnei hamelech. I would argue that this Gemara makes it sound that that's not pshat, because if it were din in omed lefnei hamelech, then it shouldn't matter whether it's on your back or whatever. It has to do with your ability to focus as you're davening. Rav Asher Weiss wrote to Tzvik also that he didn't think that was pshat in the Rambam at all. Anyway, the tefillin mahi, what's the din of tefillin that we're talking about? Detanya hayinose masel rosho utefillin barosho. If a person was carrying a burden on his head and he has tefillin on his head, imayu tefillin rotzos aser. If the tefillin are going to be crushed by the package that's on his head, then it's aser. Vimlav mutter. But if the tefillin is not going to be crushed, then it's mutter. Beza masli amru masli shlavas kavin. We're talking about a masli that's for kavin. Tani Rabbi Chia, Hamotzi Zevel al Rosh, if a person's taking out Zevel on his head, so something that's really disgusting, that would be inappropriate. Utfilin Rosh, he's got Tfilin on his head at the same time. Hareze lo yisalkam letzdadim, don't move the Tfilin off to the side. Velo yikshrem b'masav, nor should you tie your Tfilin around your waist. Mimreshu noig ben minug b'zayon, because that's considered a minug b'zayon. What should you do? Avol koshmel zro'o b'makom Tfilin. Tie them on your arm in the makom Tfilin, even though this is your tefillin shel rosh, obviously. Mishum tevei shila amra afilu mitpacha shalahem asa l'niach al rosh. Even the wrapping of the place where you wrap your tefillin, the tefillin boxes, you can't where you put them away, or the cloth that you cover them with at night, you're not allowed to put on your head. Sheish put asa l'niach al rosh sheish put tefillin, not allowed to put on your head when you have tefillin. V'kama amra vaya afilu rivad the rivad the pumbadisa. Even if it's a very small item, still you're not allowed to put it on your head. It's considered to be zayon to put other things on your head when you're wearing tefillin. The Rambam quotes this halacha that you're not allowed to put even a mitpachas, even a cloth, at the time that you have tefillin on your head. And he says, "Avol tzonef umitznafto al tefilav," but you're allowed to put your turban over your tefillin. So the Kesef Mishnah explains that it's only a mitpachas that's not meant as a malbush that you're not allowed to put on your head when you're wearing tefillin. But if it's meant as a headdress, as a head covering, then certainly you're allowed to put it on your head. And that's what we rely on when you have bachrim that put on tefillin and put a hat on, even though they're wearing tefillin on their head. L'chora, it seems like it's against this Gemara. But that's what the Rambam's mechadesh, that if it's something that's meant as a head covering, that's meant as a head, or we wear our yarmulkes or our talis over our head, that's okay, because that's what it was meant to do. So if it's meant as a head covering, then it's okay. Amrav Yudah. My kitzva b'kri el yeshbo kedei nefila. So the Mishnah had said that you can't measure a kri as the amount that's considered worth working, continuing to work the field for. Rather, you have to say if there's kedei nefila. So v'kama kedei nefila. What's kedei nefila? Rabbi Ami Amar Rabbi Yochanan abas in the kor, that four sa'ah for each kor. Rabbi Ami dileya, meaning it's enough to replant the field. Rabbi Ami dileya Amar shmonas in the kor, that it's measured by eight sa'in for each kor. before. Amrlehu Sabal Rav Chama Breid Rab Baravua Azbralach. I'll explain to you. They're not even arguing. B'shneid Rabbi Yochanan Shmeina Ara. B'shneid Rabbi Yama Have a Kchisha Ara. In different times, the land was stronger and weaker, so we would have different measurements of what it takes to replant the land. It's not asam aruach shapizra yasa umrin. If you have wind that blows grain all over the leket, so you can't see the leket anymore, and you don't know how much leket was there. You have to do a cheshbon how much leket should have been made. You give that to aniyim. You give aniyim whatever kedei nefila is. Kam kedei nefila. Kias rav dimi. Yom rav blaz vitim rav yochanan arbaas kavan lekor. Boy rav yirmiya lekor zera or lekor tvua. Is it a cord of zera or a cord of tvua? Lemapolis yada lemapolis shvarim. Are we cheshboning based on how a person who would plant the field by hand or based on oxen that would drop seed in the field? Tashma dechias rav nam rav yavam rav blaz rami lam rav yochanan arbaas kavan lekor zera. It's a cord of zera. V'adayin tibayelach lemapolis yada lemapolis shvarim. But the other shaila we're still stuck with is it mapolis yad or mapolis shvarim? How do you measure the cord of zera? Zera based on how the field would be planted, by human hands or by oxen. Teku, so that the Gemara leaves unresolved. And Beis Hashem will pick up at the Mishnah tomorrow.